waited. When Logan didn't elaborate, he said, "My car's been found, but neither Mrs. Fanning nor her daughter was in it. Is that what you're saying?"
"Correct. They'd have been burnt to a crisp if they had been in it, mind you."
Orr closed and opened his eyes. She torched it. "Can we go somewhere more comfortable?" Orr took Logan upstairs to the tea room, along the corridor from the arson squad, sat at the stained Laminex table and pushed out a chair with his foot. "Sit." When Logan was sitting, Orr said flatly, "Just get it over with." "As you know, we tracked your car north on the Hume, then back to the city several hours later. Anyway, we took a closer look at the freeway camera images. A couple of young guys in the front, no one in the back." Logan shook his head commiseratively. "Then about an hour ago, we found it torched in Footscray." "It wasn't a car you'd bother taking to a chop shop," Orr said, trying for humour to stave off what was still to come. Logan acknowledged it with a brief, fatigued grimace. "Anyway, we were monitoring Mrs. Fanning's Visa card, and she rented a Hyundai from Budget in Albury-Wodonga. We're presuming that's where she left your car, maybe with the keys in the ignition."
"She kept going."
Logan shook his head. "The opposite. She drove all the way back here, through the city and down to Geelong." Orr was hopeful.
"To her parents?"
"To her husband's."
"Mate, don't string it out."
Logan said, "It seems mother and daughter trashed the place. Threw paint over the carpets, left taps running into plugged sinks and the bathtub, smashed windows." Orr was holding himself tightly. Logan took a breath. "And that's all I know so far." He gave Orr a sharp look. "You need to tell her to give herself up." Orr got to his feet and stood, irresolute. A civilian clerk hurried in with an armful of folders looking for someone. Glanced at the two men oddly, but said nothing and went out again. Orr said, "I'm not in contact with her."
"You need to tell us where she is."
Orr strode away. "I'm not in contact with her." Claire Pascal was pretending to read files when he returned. She took one look at him and got to her feet. "Are you all right?" Orr explained. She wrapped him in a brief hug.
"What a shitty situation."
"Out of my hands now," Orr said, wondering if that were true. He buried himself in work, phone calls, internet searches, and eventually learned that the family who'd taken in Mary Peart and her sister was not just any old family. Chapter 32. "Mascot and his team. Bad case of tunnel vision," said Orr. Friday morning, and he was in the passenger seat, his lap piled with Google printouts and Reese Mascot's files, Helen Colfax behind the wheel. The traffic slow moving now that they'd left the M1, and were heading along Wellington Road. Destination, the hill town of Emerald.
"Tunnel vision," Helen Colfax said encouragingly.
Orr lifted a thin file. With Robert Sherlow in the frame, there was barely any follow-up on the sister or the family that took the girls in, nothing about them being fundamentalist crackpots. When Colfax stopped for a red light, he slid a photo under her nose. Warren Hintz, leader of the Assemblies of Jehovah International. Printed from a news website, the photograph showed a portly man in a dark suit, his beaming, well-fed face crowned with a proud mane of swept-back white hair. He was shaking hands with a former Liberal Prime Minister, also beaming.
"Look who he's with," Colfax said.
"Must have been an election on," Orr said.
"Anything for a vote,"
Colfax agreed. The light changed. She accelerated smoothly away.
"What else?"
Orr continued. The AJI was small, secretive, homophobic, misogynistic, and well-heeled. First established in Scotland by Hintz in 1974, offshoots following in Germany, the USA, New Zealand, and Australia. "Harvey Bay in the mid-1980s, Orr said. Then the Gold Coast, Byron Bay, Darwin, the Adelaide Hills, the Blue Mountains, and finally Emerald, where Hintz now lived with his wife and their son. Orr had checked out the estate on Google Earth. Several hectares in size, with a sizable main residence and several smaller buildings set amid pines and gum trees on a slope leading to a pond fed by a small creek. Other images confirmed Warren Hintz's status, presiding over a baptism in that same pond, stepping out of a black Mercedes, boarding a small plane emblazoned Assemblies. Not short of a dollar, all said. Donations, plus many of the flock run successful businesses. Hintz and his family have built a few small-scale housing developments and shopping centres. He went on. The church had flown under the radar for many years, enjoying its tax-exempt status, before cracks began to appear. Some members left the fold and began to speak out. A few returned, having found the outside world hard and bewildering. Those who did not were excommunicated. The few who agreed to be interviewed told reporters that their sins had ranged from buying a computer or some other trapping of a worldly society to being immoral, encouraging their children to get an education, and questioning the elders. You could say there was quite a bit to question, all said. Such as church elders arranging marriages, urging husbands to beat disobedient wives, exploiting the authority of their position to sexually abuse the children of parishioners. Their website opposed gay marriage, listed crimes by Muslims, and claimed the Black Sunday bushfires were God's punishment for the country's lax abortion laws. Helen snorted, shook her head. Things really came unstuck for Hintz when he urged his congregation to donate money to an anti-Islamic political party, which he happened to head, all said. Labour politicians finally got off their asses and argued the church was not a charity and therefore its tax-exempt status should be revoked. Hintz denied it, of course, and for a while no one did anything. Friends in high places. Friends like prime ministers, all said. And meanwhile there was the Child Sex Abuse Royal Commission. As soon as that started to build up steam, Warren stepped down and handed the reins to his son. Because he was named. Not named, but implicated. They'd reached another red light. This time all handed Helen a Hintz family photograph. Warren, his son Adam, his wife Judith. Adam was a tall, stocky, bull-headed young man. Not yet portly like his father, but heading that way. Soft-looking, not commanding. And he stood glued to his mother's flank, as though cringing from his father. How old was the son in 2009? 21. Colfax nodded, and all knew what she was thinking. Adam Hintz was in the frame. He'd been a young man, not a child, when Mary Peart died. And the Royal Commission? Father and son were asked to appear in late 2016, all said. They didn't, in the end. No witnesses, only vague allegations. Adam claimed he knew nothing about the actions of the elders, and Warren was excused on the grounds he has dementia. All found another printout, a report from the Herald Sun. Meanwhile, the church could be struggling financially. Last year, their charity status was revoked, meaning they've been hit with hefty tax concession repayments. That's the big picture. What about the smaller picture? Would these people murder someone who left the fold? All thought about it. Mary Peart wasn't the only one who left. And are we asking if they murdered Robert because he lured her away? That seems extravagant. Carmen Sherlow said an old man hassled her and demanded to know where something was. Are we thinking it was Warren Hintz? All nodded. Good question. We need to show her his photograph. The road wound into the hills. Helen Colfax said, Dementia. Real or pretense? Apparently real, all said. But thought back to a news clip he'd found yesterday. Warren Hintz in a wheelchair outside the Royal Commission. His son pushing it. The old man's face, vacant, almost drooling. Then a nasty couple of seconds when a reporter shoved a microphone in his face and his expression sharpened to a fleeting, hard malice. If the old man's senile, we may not get much out of anyone, Colfax said. There's Mary Peart's sister. Is she still there? The wife? The son? He will be heavily invested in protecting the old patriarch, Helen said. A patriarch who runs a building firm, all said. Digging a grave, pouring a slab, patching and painting over bullet holes and bloodstains, she shrugged. Anyone with DIY skills can do those sorts of things. They rode in silence until Helen said, Any word from Mrs. Fanning or her daughter?
How much did she know?
All said, I'm not in contact, and told her what Logan had told him. And the situation with Claire? Startled, all waited a beat.
She's fine.
He paused, wound his window down a crack.
She's been staying at my place.
I know, Colfax said with a hard edge. That's why I asked. She's going back to her husband sometime on the weekend, said All, also with an edge to his voice. And not that it's anyone's business, but I'm not involved with Claire or Neve. I'm a friend.
Don't be naive. Sooner or later, some tabloid hack is going to start sniffing around.
All knew she was right.
Boss,
you need to do what I do. Keep the public and the private at arm's length.
Don't get involved, in other words.
All, realizing he knew little about his boss's life outside the job, said,
What does your partner do?
Colfax laughed. My husband is a photographer for the local newspaper. No crime scenes, just garden fates and netball finals and shopkeepers. My son plays football. My daughter thumps around in a pink tutu on Saturday mornings. A few $100 to the Royal Children's each year, and my conscience is clear.
All wondered if he quite liked his boss.
Uh-huh. All I'm saying is keep your nose clean. Don't bring the force into disrepute. Something like that.
Google Maps announced they'd arrived at their destination.
Expecting a walled compound shut away from the world in miserable secrecy, All and Colfax found a generic outer suburban McMansion with a small builder's truck and a glossy black Ford Territory parked in the driveway. The former was loaded with ladders, toolboxes, and polythene pipes and had W&A Hints Builders painted on the doors. The ladder had a bumper sticker. What would Jesus do? To one side was a low hedge and a wooden gate signposted Assemblies of Jehovah International, leading to a track that wound downslope through a cluster of small buildings, chapels, meeting rooms, to the baptism pond All had seen on Google. They were expected. Colfax hadn't wanted to cold call on a church, and Adam Hintz answered their knock. Barely 30, but wearing his years badly. Tall and running to fat. Behind the eager greetings and handshakes, All sensed a small, shy boy trapped inside a bewilderingly large and somewhat alien body.
Come in, come in, Hint said.
He filled out grey suit pants, a white shirt and black shoes. The leather soles slapped as he led them along a hallway to a plain sitting room with a dining alcove at the far end. No TV, no flowers. No books or magazines, apart from a Bible on a wooden stand. Off-white walls, unfussy leather sofa and armchairs. A handful of photographs on a mantle. Warren Hintz with the Prime Minister. Warren Hintz with his wife and son. Warren Hintz with eyes closed and hand raised in an unadorned chapel. Warren himself was in the room, slumped at one end of the sofa beside his wife. A walking stick resting against his knee. He gave the detectives a dazed, open-mouthed, wondering look. Some of his old weight had been stripped away by time and illness. Judith Hintz rose to greet them, a slender, harried woman, wearing a long navy skirt with a lighter blue cardigan over a white top. An unremarkable face, a hint of worry, the fingers of one hand twisting a large ring on her other hand. Were the women of this church allowed to wear jewellery? All wondered. This one was a chunk of milky opal set among small diamonds. Probably valuable, but unexpectedly garish. Behind the sofa, in a patch of shadows, hovered a third person. She was mid-twenties, but as full of elbows, knees, ankles and wrist bones as a teenager in full growth spurt. Tall, with a long, thin neck, and dressed like Judith, in a plain skirt and top. No rings, earrings or bracelets. Thick black shoulder-length hair, pale skin, eyes bruised by fatigue or anxiety. The hair, the skin, the eyes. A natural goth, but without the clothing and makeup. All snorted to himself. She probably didn't know what a goth was. She looked tense, jaw clenching, nails bitten to the quick. He could see from the vibration of her torso that one leg was jiggling.
"Tea? Coffee?" asked Adam Hintz. "Ruth, please put the kettle on."
The younger woman slipped silently from the room. Helen Colfax said,
"Ruth? As in Mary's sister?"
"Mary's sister, yes."
"We'll wait till she comes back."
"She doesn't really know anything," Judith Hintz said, her voice an odd, sultry rasp.
"Even so," all said.
Colfax crossed the dark grey carpet and stuck her hand out to Warren Hintz. All knew what she was doing. She was taking charge of the room.
"Mr. Hintz, my colleague and I are here to talk about Mary."
His voice came in a weak croak.
"Oh?"
"He doesn't remember her," Judith said, with an apologetic wince. "Or rather, his memory comes and goes."
"It's up to me now," Adam said. "I keep the flame burning."
All said, "With your mother's help." Judith placed her hand at her throat in dismay.
"Goodness, no. I'm directed in God's purpose through Adam."
Nice for Adam, all thought. Or not. Presently, Ruth re-entered the room, carrying a large tray with tea things and a jar of instant coffee. She placed it on a glass-topped coffee table and stood back.
"Join us, please, Ruth," Helen said. "We're here to talk about your sister."
Ruth ducked her head shyly. With an asking permission glance at Adam, she pulled a straight-backed chair from the dining table and placed it behind the sofa. All was about to ask her to join the rough circle of chairs, but then decided this was a girl who knew her place. She'd be less useful to them if she felt uncomfortable. Colfax began. Addressing Judith, she said,
"Your family kindly took in Mary and Ruth on the death of their parents?"
"They were dead to us, yes. We did our Christian duty by the girls."
With a frown at the syntax, Colfax said,
"And a few years later, Mary formed an attachment with a young man named Robert Sherlow?"
It was Adam who answered.
"Robert did some odd jobs for us on various building sites and in the grounds of our church."
He gestured to the buildings and parkland slope outside. "The devil was strong in him, I fear, and soon strong in Mary." All watched Ruth for a reaction. Nothing. She stared at her lap. He swung his gaze onto Adam.
"Would you care to elaborate? The devil was in her."
"She began to question our faith, our beliefs. She wore indecent clothes. She became disruptive."
Colfax said,
"The girls lived here in the house?
I saw what looked to be cabin accommodation in among your other buildings."
"They lived here with us, yes."
"Was Robert allowed into the house?"
Judith said,
"Absolutely not."
Ruth was sinking deeper into her chair. All said, "Did everyone feel that way about Mary? You all argued with her?"
"We told her our position," Adam said. "But ultimately she was not able to overcome her earthly concerns, and she ran away with Mr. Sherlow."
"Were you friends with him, Mr. Hintz?"
Adam said stiffly,
"We were the same age, but certainly not friends. He was a casual employee."
"You are aware that Robert and Mary shacked up together?"
All said harshly.
"In an old farmhouse near Piercedale?"
"We may not be entirely of the modern world and its madness," Adam Hintz said, "but nor are we ignorant. I, for one, was well aware of the nature of Mary and Robert's cohabitation."
"Did any 30-year-old anywhere speak like this weirdo?" wondered all.
"Yes, but did you visit them? Try to get Mary to return? Try to bring Robert into the fold?"
"We did not. To have done so would have been to battle hard with the devil. Mary and Robert were not inclined to share in God's grace with us, nor ready to hear God's call."
Colfax said,
"Ruth, did you visit your sister?"
Ruth gave Adam a frightened glance and received a pinched nod. She said in a hesitant whisper,
"No."
"May I ask why not?"
Judith said,
"Mary was quite willful and disruptive. It was difficult for Ruth to withstand her, so we thought it best if she did not visit."
Colfax cocked her head.
"Ruth?"
As if spotlights were trained on her,
Ruth shrank and gave a tiny nod. I thought going to see Mary wasn't the right thing to do.
Adam and Judith beamed at her. All realized they'd been worried what she might say. Glancing from one to the other, he said, Did Robert and Mary live alone?
As I understand it, Adam said.
And when Robert worked here prior to that, did he ever have friends with him? Was he ever visited by friends?
Certainly not.
And Mary, what about her friends?
Mary's friends were here, Judith said, among our congregants.
Her son added, But Robert was somewhat wild. He might well have associated with the wrong people. You didn't see anyone else at the old house.
As I think I told you, Acting Sergeant All, we did not visit.
Helen Colfax cut in, almost tauntingly. Robert making a cozy little love nest for himself and Mary, it must have been a slap in the face for you all.
It's not fair to talk about them like that,
said Ruth suddenly, her voice soft but with some steel in it.
They were renovating the house for the owner.
So you did visit them, Ruth. But the room's atmosphere had shifted. Ruth shook her head, sank in her chair. What about Mr. Hintz? Colfax said. Surely he dropped in on Mary to see that she was all right? Or you did, Judith? Or Adam?
Judith said, What Mary and Robert did together was no longer any of our concern. I wish you would listen.
When all their questions were exhausted and nothing new had been learnt, All and Colfax stood ready to leave. The old man had said nothing and remained seated as they all moved to the hallway door. All held back a little and let his hand brush Ruth Peart's. She jumped to feel the stiff edge of his business card, and for a moment he thought she'd balk, but then her fingers closed on the card and it was whisked into a pocket. At the front door, Adam said, as though to be polite, Would you care to worship with us for half an hour? Colfax said briskly, Sorry, we'll be battling Friday traffic as it is. Hintz turned to All. And you, Mr. All? Are you ready to hear God's call?
I'm always hearing calls, but they're not the kind anyone else wants to hear. Besides, I do my best work on my feet, not my knees.
Hintz gave him a huge, satisfied smile and wagged a finger. Ah, but it's hard to stumble when you're on your knees. All said, If I pull that finger, will you toot?
Chapter 33
Black mark for antagonizing the public, Acting Sergeant All, said Colfax in the car. But there was humor in her voice. Late Friday morning, the traffic building up, as if everyone was headed somewhere for lunch. So, she went on, was it the father or the son? All shrugged. Or both? The thing is, why the delay? Those kids ran off in May. They weren't shot till September. Maybe the need for punishment built up over time.
You think that's what it was? Punishment?
Punish Mary for leaving the church and the boyfriend for luring her away, Colfax said. Unless something else set off the killings, like sexual jealousy. All mused on it. We have the gun, we have the prints. At the very least, we should see if they match anyone.
Have to arrest them first. Unless he smuggled out a teacup just now.
They'll surround themselves with lawyers, who'll argue Warren is gaga and the son was just a kid at the time. All muttered his disappointment.
Pity we weren't able to speak to each of them alone. I'd like to pin down times and movements. Did they know the actual address where Mary was living? Did Ruth visit? Was someone from the church watching the house? Told them when to strike?
Or, you know, the Hintzes are blameless.
They fell into silence until Helen Colfax said, We need to know if Carmen Sherlow can ID Hintz.
I can do that now, All said.
He snapped the clearest file shot of Warren Hintz with his phone and texted it to Sherlow. The reply came within a couple of minutes.
Nothing like him.
Worth a shot, Colfax sighed.
They'd returned the unmarked car and were riding the elevator when All's phone rang, a landline number he didn't recognize. He picked up, and a whispery voice said,
You gave me your card.
The doors opening, All signaled to Colfax to follow him to a quiet corner of the corridor, mouthing,
Ruth Peart.
Leaning against the wall, he said, "Ruth, I understand if you can't talk now, or not for long, but is there a chance you can get away later?" She said in a rush, "Not today. Tomorrow morning." "Is there any chance you can come to us? We can send a car for you if you like."
"No, no time. I can get away for half an hour when I do the shopping."
"Okay. Maybe we can meet you in your bakery or the..."
"No. The baker's an elder in our church. 10:30 in the Catholic op shop behind the Coles car park."
With a derisive snort, she added, "None of our congregants would dream of going in there." All spent the remainder of the day digging deeper into the Assemblies of Jehovah. He tried calling Neve and Pia, but their phones were apparently off. Then, at knock-off time, as he was leaving with Claire Pascal, Logan bailed him up in the foyer. "A word?" Logan looked deeply fatigued, still barely and stolid, but now a flicker of sadness showed on his heavy features. "Bad news," said All flatly. "You could say that." Logan glanced at Claire, who said mulishly, "I'm staying." Logan shrugged. "Suit yourself." All said, "Let's do this in the tea room." "I won't. I need to crash. Been racing around all day." All folded his arms. "Okay. What happened?" "Long story short, Mrs. Fanning ran a rental car into a tree on a back road near Mount Gambier, and she's in a coma." All realized he was gaping. He felt Claire Pascal grab the crook of his arm.
"What about Pia? Was she in the car?"
"She was. A bit knocked about, broken leg, broken ribs. Otherwise okay. They were both airlifted to Adelaide. Different hospitals." Claire's fingers were a clamp on All's arm.
"Is anyone with them?"
"Mrs. Fanning's parents are on their way over," Logan said. Then he shook his head. "Meanwhile, I've got the husband's lawyer hassling me." All took out his wallet, fished around for Georgina Town's business card. "Neve's lawyer," he said. "Might be able to run interference for you." Pocketing the card, Logan looked pityingly at All. "I spoke to people who knew Mrs. Fanning in Geelong. Seems the husband's a shithead, and she's a nice lady. Had a rough trot." "She is," All said. "Anyway, nothing's going to come back on you." All flexed his jaw, his fists. He wished Logan hadn't said that. "Last thing on my mind, all right?" Logan raised his hands, placating, nodded goodbye, and left the building. All tried calling Pia's phone. A man's voice said, "Who is this?" All broke the connection. Chapter 34. First thing on Saturday morning, All made contact with Neve's parents. They'd rented a flat in Adelaide and would stay until their daughter and granddaughter had recovered. No real change, but Pia was doing pretty well. They were beside her bed, in fact. Would All like to talk to her?
"Aye, aye."
A screech of pleasure, before the child remembered herself. "Hello, bub. I'll come and see you as soon as I can, all right?" Her voice hollower now, she said, "All right." "Claire sends her love?" But all Pia said to that was, "Well, I have to live with Dad now." Then to work. By 10:15, All and Pascal had found the Catholic op shop in Emerald. Musty air, a couple of women flicking expertly through racks of T-shirts, three small children on the floor with picture books. And Ruth Peart, tense and pale, emerging from the shadows.
"Can we do this in your car?"
She was edgy as they walked, holding herself stiffly, wanting to hurry but unable to.
"Please, I might not have much time."
"Are you hurt?"
"Please, someone might see."
And she took an age to relax her spine against the seat back as they settled in the car, Claire beside her, All in the front. Again, All said, "Ruth, are you hurt?"
"Fine,"
she gasped. "I think someone hurt you, Ruth." Claire reached out, took her arm, and pushed the sleeve to the elbow. Finger bruises.
"Who did this to you, Ruth?" "It doesn't matter. We can help you. Come with us, right now, no looking back. No.
Doubt and wretchedness and a vigorous headshake.
Not just yet.
Claire nodded.
That's fine. We understand. What's happening at the house? Are they all there?
She nodded, but holding back, all thought. Ruth, what happened?
Your visit yesterday set them off.
Set them off in what way?
They're worried. They're angry.
They hit you.
She hung her head, moved futilely to get comfortable.
What was it about our visit that upset them? She looked anguished.
It's partly that they're tired of all the attention. They hate people snooping around. And then knowing Robert and Mary were both killed. But mainly it's what I said.
Claire said, I don't recall you saying anything.
Remember? I said about Robert and Mary doing up the old house.
All was baffled. He could see Claire was baffled. Let's start with why you wanted to meet with us. With another little gasp of pain, Ruth Peart said,
Until you came yesterday, I had no idea about Robert.
That his body had been found? She nodded. The others didn't tell you? You didn't see it on the news?
No. We don't watch the news.
It's against your religion, all said sourly. Ruth didn't register the tone, simply nodded ingenuously.
That's right.
Claire gave all a look. But you've always known about Mary's death. That wasn't hidden from you.
It was awful, Piet said.
She paused, looking into the distance, concentrating.
Half of me believed Robert killed her, but the other half didn't. Does that make sense?
All smiled. I'm forever holding contradictory positions in my head, convinced they're equally valid. The smile didn't work. Ruth Peart said,
Everyone said he did it. Adam and Judith and the father and the elders, everyone.
When you say the father, is that Warren? A middle-aged man was approaching the car, carrying supermarket bags. Ruth Peart froze, sank in her seat, not relaxing until he was past.
Yes.
Claire said gently,
When you say a part of you didn't think Robert killed your sister, what do you mean? Because he was so in love with her. And Mary was in love with him.
She looked away. They waited. Presently, Claire prompted.
What was it you wanted to say?
It came out in a rush.
Back then everything was upside down for me. I know it's wrong, but I was confused and hurt by what Mary did.
Again they waited. All said, What did she do?
Turned her back on us. Me. Left me behind to suffer.
All chose his words. I understand that when your parents died, you and Mary were taken in by Mr. Hintz and his family. She gave him a complicated look.
My parents didn't die.
He waited. Eventually, she said,
They were excommunicated.
Claire said, Can I ask why?
Falling out with the elders.
The elders again. All said, What kind of falling out? Was it over doctrine?
Over a computer. Mum and Dad bought us a computer.
Seeing their bafflement, she went on, faintly exasperated.
The Assemblies doesn't allow computers or TV. No immoral behaviour, no going against the elders' decisions, no going to university.
I see, said All, who didn't yet.
So Mum and Dad were excommunicated.
What exactly did that entail? Ruth looked at All, astounded.
They were excommunicated? They were banned.
In effect, they were dead to the church?
Yes. I'm in touch with them now, though. They still kind of believe in the faith.
She clutched Claire's sleeve.
Please don't tell Adam or Judith. We won't.
All said, Ruth, if you're being mistreated, leave. Surely your parents would have you back?
I can't go against my husband,
she said wretchedly. Ah, you're married to Adam, All said.
Yes.
Are your parents nearby? Ruth gestured languidly at the hills around them.
Not far.
She winced again, the pain physical and emotional.
Why didn't they try harder?
Claire touched her wrist.
How old were you when the Hinses took you in? 9. Mary was 12 and about to start high school, and that's why Mum and Dad thought we needed a computer. Were you ever allowed to see your parents? No. But last year Mum saw me in the street, and I've seen her a couple of times.
Again she beseeched them.
Don't tell Adam.
All wondered what might have happened if police had followed up on the Piatt family back in 2009. Would Ruth have stayed with the Hinses? But even if Reese Mascot had found and interviewed the parents, they still kind of believed. He might not have got anything from them anyway. Have you been married long?
1 year.
Looking away awkwardly, she said,
He used to be in love with Mary.
All exchanged a glance with Claire. It must have made him mad when she ran off with Robert. She glanced at each of them, as if regretting that she'd spoken.
He'd never kill anyone.
Famous last words. Before All could follow up, Claire leaned close to Ruth Piatt, placing a hand over the young woman's forearm.
Ruth, you said Mary turned her back on you, left you behind to suffer.
Piatt looked away.
Father could be strict.
All exchanged another glance with Claire. He said, Mary ran away because he was strict, leaving you behind. You felt betrayed. Ruth Piatt's knuckles as she clenched her fists were white pebbles. She ground out the words.
She ran away because she was in love.
A pause.
They took me with them.
Sensing anguish and guilt, All trod carefully. You went to their house with them?
Yes.
Did you stay long?
Only 1 day,
she whispered. How did you get back?
Rob drove me.
Why didn't you stay?
I hated the house for a start.
Describe it.
It was horrible. I mean, Rob was doing it up, but still, there were floorboards missing everywhere and holes in the walls, and it was freezing cold, and there were rats. I hated it. Plus,
they waited. In a burst, she said,
Plus it felt so wrong. I thought Mary should come back with me. I thought God would punish us.
Ruth Piatt stared at her lap. All wondered what she was hiding. He said, If Mr. Hintz was strict, why not live with a different family? Or ask Mr. Hintz to mend bridges with your parents? Ruth looked at him in wonderment.
In the assemblies, children belong to the church, not their parents.
Oh, said All, as though he should have known. Claire said,
Are you in love with Adam? He's my husband.
And Claire said, Did he abuse you too? It was a clever question, well placed in the flow, and got a resolve. Ruth Piatt slumped. When she lifted her face to them, it was filled with pain.
Can we please not talk about that?
All said, Ruth, we're police officers. We've heard everything. We don't judge. We don't need details. We simply need to know. Were you and Mary abused by Mr. Hintz?
Yes.
Claire said, Sexual abuse, Ruth? More than a sharp word or a slap on the legs? A nod that was barely there. But Adam wasn't part of it? A tiny head shake. All tried to provide a summing up that would help her. You were still young when Mary asked you to run away with her. You were, are, a good person, an obedient person. You still believed in the church. A part of you thought it was wrong of Mary to run. And she took you to live in a horrible old shack, and it was all too much, so you went back to live with Mr. Hintz.
Yes.
A mutter, almost inaudible.
You went back to being abused,
Claire murmured. Ruth Peart shrugged.
Only for a while.
Got too old, wondered all. You did nothing wrong, Ruth. Those clenched fists again.
That's just it. I did do something wrong.
Claire touched her forearm. Ruth Peart's eyes spurted.
I told Father where they were living.
There's our killer, all thought. But the timing puzzled him. Mary had run away with her boyfriend in May, murdered in September. A slow-burning fuse? When exactly did you tell him that?
As soon as Rob dropped me back.
She shifted in her seat.
I sneaked in, which was stupid because, of course, Father knew I'd been gone.
That was a few months before the murders. Do you know if anyone, Mr. Hintz or Adam or Judith or the elders, tried to visit Mary and persuade her to come back? Ruth Peart shifted uncomfortably.
I don't know. I've kept my head down ever since.
Claire said, Was Robert also a member of the church?
No.
What did Mr. Hintz say when you got back?
He hit me. He said it was my fault.
All said gently, I hope you don't feel any blame now, Ruth.
More tears. But I do. I was so confused about everything. I couldn't just walk away from what had been my whole life. It was like I couldn't think.
If Father was angry with you, then he would have been furious with Mary. She shook her head.
He was like, good riddance to bad rubbish.
All tried not to seem dubious. Ruth looked at each of them, distressed.
I don't know if he killed Mary and Rob or not.
Let's pretend he did. Was his anger mounting, festering, by any chance? Or maybe something else happened to set him off?
He was always great at festering,
Ruth muttered with a harsh laugh. Starting to show some backbone, all thought. Who hit you, Ruth? Yesterday or this morning? She looked at her lap.
I had to be punished.
Who?
Judith. And Adam.
Come with us, Ruth. Right now.
Not yet. The time's not right.
Claire said, Just let us know when and we'll help. Won't we, Alan? All nodded. We now think Robert was murdered at the same time as Mary, probably by the same person, who staged things to look like Robert was to blame. Keeping all that in mind, is there anything that puzzled you at the time that makes sense now? Ruth shifted again, uttered tiny huffs of pain.
One day Judith gave me a big slap and said, Were you in on it?
When was this?
1 minute she was telling me Mary had been found dead, and the next she was hitting me.
What did she think you'd been involved in?
I have no idea.
All had been thinking about the house. When you say Robert was renovating, she cut in.
He finished. Mary said he did a terrific job.
Some witnesses told you everything, others nothing. And there were those who dribbled information and misunderstood the importance of crucial facts. All said patiently, When did she tell you that?
When she tried to get me to go with them the second time.
All said patiently, Ruth, you'll have to be a bit clearer. Ruth Peart took a deep breath and said,
I always go to the chapel when I get up in the mornings, and one day they were there waiting for me.
When? She hunched her shoulders, as if it pained her to say the words.
The day before Mary was killed.
Did anyone see them? The replies were increasingly monosyllabic.
Don't know.
But you still thought it was wrong to leave the church? She was impatient with all's dimness.
Well, yes, but they wanted to take me across to Perth, make a fresh start there.
Then she hunched again, wouldn't look at him. Survivor guilt, thought Orr. If she'd gone with them, she'd be dead now.
Why leave? Said Claire. If the house was fixed.
Piet frowned.
Because it had been sold.
The answer came to all, a cold sensation, and it explained the panic in the Hints household. The house wasn't pulled down, was it? Ruth seemed to think that was self-evident.
Rob said it would be cut into three sections and then put on trucks to take it to a new location.
She began to weep.
You think the father killed Mary and Rob, don't you?
99% sure, all said.
I don't want to go back.
Chapter 35. The Monash Medical Centre, said all, speaking to Colfax on his mobile. He was in the passenger seat, Claire driving, out along Eastlink again. They're keeping her in for observation.
Blood in the urine?
Must have been quite a beating. I'm glad we had her checked, all said.
She'll make a statement?
Possibly. Probably. Colfax was silent. But she was on a golf course and all could hear voices. Birdsong. Then she was saying,
Doesn't matter. We can press charges. Meanwhile, see what Angela Sullivan has to say for herself. Find the house and have it forensically examined. That's if it's still standing.
Arrests would mean fingerprints, thought Orr. Then they could run those prints against the prints on the gun. Boss? Outside Sullivan's house, Orr stretched the kinks in his spine. Too much charging around the countryside in a car. He followed Claire to the front door, pressed the bell. Nothing. Pounded his fist. Nothing. Let's try around the back. The side path took them to a typical suburban yard. Small garden beds, flowers, shrubs, and a vegetable plot, all showing some semblance of design. Rock borders painted white, a wooden garden seat artfully angled beneath a small gum tree. A wheelbarrow, doubling as a flower pot. Neat, but in an ongoing war with nature. Sullivan apparently happy for that to happen, thought all, noting the weeds, the moss on the rocks, the dead stalks and birdshit. Mostly, he was interested in the sliding glass door beyond a stretch of sun-faded patio boards. It stood open. All shouted, Police! As he followed Claire up onto the patio, and now he heard a muffled voice and thumping sounds. Angela Sullivan was in her kitchen, duct-taped to a chair. Do you need a doctor? Sullivan, ashen, trembling, said, I'm all right. A bruise coming up on her cheek. Finger bruises on her upper arms. No blood or broken bones. Smudged and reddened skin where she'd been taped.
He punched me in the stomach and had me on the chair before I knew what happened.
Describe him.
She cocked her head at all. About your age?
Did he tell you his name? She shook her head. All took out his phone and showed her the picture of Warren Hints. Is this him?
No.
A photo of Adam Hints.
No, too young.
Claire handed her a glass of water. Sullivan clasped it in both hands as though fearful it might abandon her. It was the body language of a child. Just one man, no woman.
No.
Okay, moving on, Ball said, pocketing his phone. My colleague and I think you've been giving us a lot of bullshit, Angela. What does your visitor want?
What else? Money for drugs?
You can do better than that. He moved behind her, rested his rump against the bench. She would need to turn her head to see him, and he could see she hated that. Claire took over. Angela, look at me. What did he want? A shrug. This involves two murders, Angela. You don't get to play dumb. Sullivan finally looked at Pascal, then around at all. Less sulky now.
a little conniving hardness in her face. If you must know, he asked about the old house.
Now we're getting to it.
The house you demolished.
She looked away.
Yes.
Angela, look at me. You lied to the police in a murder investigation. The house was not demolished. Robert Sherlow fixed it up, then you sold it and it was moved to a new location.
So what? No law against it?
There is against lying to the police, Orr said. The house is a crime scene, Pascal said. It might still contain evidence.
Sullivan gave a little scoffing grimace. After all this time? Don't be stupid.
Orr said, why did you lie?
Craning her neck, she shot him a quick, hunted look.
Angela, Orr said, a touch of the whip in his voice. Why did you lie about the house?
She shouted.
Because of the asbestos!
The air went out of all.
Oh, for Christ's sake.
Still heated, Sullivan said,
it was a fibro house, meaning asbestos, and I would have needed a permit to demolish it, which would have cost $10,000 because of the biohazard regulations and whatever. So I sold it.
All understood. You didn't tell the new owner.
She stared at the floor.
Who bought it, Angela? Where is it?
It was as if she hadn't heard him.
You can't blame me. I was scared back then. All those police questions. Did I know what was going on in my place? Did I have anything to do with the killing? Did I know where Robert was?
She hugged herself.
Now I'm scared all over again.
Angela, she jumped. Who bought the house and where did they put it?
She gave them a name and an address in Skye. And, as if they were merely chatting, said,
not that far from here, really. I drive past it now and then. It's amazing what Mr. Lang's done with the old place.
It actually looks quite pretty, she added wistfully.
Chapter 36. All drove. Pascal worked the radio, calling for backup, a standby ambulance and a fire truck. Skye turned out to be a region of small acreage hobby farms and rural businesses set back from the road on slightly undulating country. They passed an alpaca farm, an alternative healing clinic, a haulage contractor. Neat, modest properties alongside a sprinkling of hideous starter castles and hovels landscaped with rusted washing machines. Suddenly, Claire pulled out her phone, gave all a half smile.
Just calling the hospital, okay?
All drove, listening. It took some time, but then she was talking.
Ruth, it's Claire. Quick question. Do you know a man named Rex Osprey?
Of course, muttered All. Getting old. Losing his touch. Claire concluded the call, grinned at him.
An elder of the church.
All thought it through. The hints would stay in Emerald in case the police are watching and send their errand boy to what? Burn the place down in case there's forensic evidence tying Warren or Adam to the murders? They must be mad.
Well, duh. They are mad.
They found Angela Sullivan's old farmhouse along a dirt road choked with spring grasses. As she'd said, it was a pretty house. Cream with a green roof and a new veranda. But not peaceful right now. All shot the car into the driveway and braked hard. They piled out, all trying to read the situation in a glance. A Holden station wagon parked at the side, a black SUV in the driveway. A man he didn't know backing up, swinging a garden rake while Rex Osprey menaced him with a small pry bar. The two of them enacting a tense, jerky dance of fear and threat. Osprey hadn't registered their arrival. All darted in, shooting a glance at the veranda. Two crowbars and a hammer lay on the decking. A petrol can on its side, fuel darkening the wood, a rainbow film blooming as the sun caught the spill. No flames, but all could picture them starting, blooming, feeding on the wood-preserving oils, leaves and debris. Was anyone still inside the house? Save the stranger first. If it was the owner, Lang, he was blood-drenched, uttering awful cries, his jaw at a cruel angle. A moment later, Osprey's pry bar swiped the rake aside, swiped the other way, hitting the injured man on the shoulder. He fell, scrabbling away on his back as Osprey advanced. Coming in hard and fast, all kidney-punched the church elder.
Enough!
With slow articulations of his knees, hips, and hands, Osprey lowered himself to the ground. Otherwise, he seemed indignant.
We have a right.
You're under arrest for assault, with other charges to follow, All said, snapping handcuffs on Osprey's wrists.
We have a right!
All told him to shut up and joined Claire in helping the other man get to his feet.
Are you Mr. Lang?
A nod. Lang trying to get his words out, but whimpering with the pain. A hand to his jaw. He was about 50, and seemed as angry as Osprey, pointing incredulously, whimpering again.
An ambulance is coming, Mr. Lang. Don't try to speak, just nod. Did this man hit you?
Lang nodded, pointed. The pry bar. Evidence, and apt to be overlooked once emergency vehicles and other police arrived. I'll be back in a tick, All said, drawing out his phone. He photographed the bar, used his handkerchief to pick it up, and ran with it to the car. Securing it on the back seat, he returned to Lang in time to stop him from stepping onto the veranda.
Stay here, Mr. Lang. Is anyone inside?
The man shook his head, but he was agitated.
My house,
he slurred, then placed his palm over his jaw and whimpered again. All turned as a leisurely police car rolled up. Two uniforms got out and approached curiously. Ascertaining they were from Frankston, Claire gestured at Osprey.
This man is under arrest. Assault and deprivation of liberty, for starters. Get him checked by a doctor. We'll be along to interview him shortly.
As the car bumped away, an ambulance turned in. All watched it, trying to figure out his next move, events passing too quickly. Speaking a little too loudly, too slowly, he said to the man with a broken jaw,
Mr. Lang, is there someone we can call? Partner, friend, neighbor, son or daughter?
Lang nodded and began digging in his hip pocket. He fished out an iPhone in a leather flip case, and, as all watched, activated the screen and scrolled through his contacts list. He stopped at Bonnie and a mobile number. Proffered the phone to all.
Is Bonnie your daughter?
Lang nodded. All pressed the call symbol and a woman answered. He explained a second time, the daughter increasingly querulous. He was a policeman. Her father had been assaulted. He was okay, but an ambulance would be taking him to Frankston Hospital with a suspected broken jaw. His house was a crime scene, and would be forensically examined, meaning it might be some days before he could return to it. When the ambulance had left, he said, What do you think Osprey was talking about? Right to what? Claire shrugged. No idea. They stepped onto the veranda, all photographing the petrol can, the crowbar, and hammer. They stepped inside. The hall and rooms were neat, a mix of IKEA and furniture store chairs, tables, bookshelves, and beds. It wouldn't stay that way. He called for a forensic team. Chapter 37. Frankston police would prosecute Osprey for the attack on Lang, but were happy for All and Pascal to interview him in regard to the Slabman investigation. They were escorted to a room halfway down an airless corridor, where Osprey was seated at a scuffed plastic table with a young legal aid solicitor called Rundle. All pulled out a chair.
Mr. Osprey, I understand you've been cleared by the doctor for interview?
A soft voice emerged from fleshless lips.
Yes. But my client suffers from asthma, and I may need to ask you to stop the questioning if he becomes distressed,
Rundle said.
If he has asthma, he shouldn't go around exerting himself,
All said. The lawyer was about to object, but Osprey touched his arm. It's all right. Claire Pascal started the recordings, audio and visual. The usual disclaimers and notifications and the names of all present. The fifth player was the room. Cramped, airless, cheerless. All, certain that his chair suffered from plastic fatigue, hardly dared shift in it. He said, Mr. Osprey, have you been advised that you face charges in relation to certain matters that occurred today?
My client, Rundle said, is aware of his rights and obligations and is willing to cooperate in any way possible, but we would question the severity of those charges.
and I understand that this interview is not in relation to those charges, but certain historical